Luck on Sunday, brought to you by Whirlpool. Bet with the world.
There's no point saying you've got 10 minutes because you know it's going to be 20. Whatever. Here we go then. Open banking. We'll start this off. Right, Maddie, what would be your primary objection, if indeed you had one, to open banking?
Civil liberties, I think, okay. Nick. Banking, sharing any of your details, an incredibly personal, intrusive thing. And, the main thing that I was gesturing to you about during when Neil was chatting then was the fact that these companies actually have licence to share your details.
Oh, that's what that gesture meant. Sorry.
Were you getting confused? Yeah. With third party. So, to me, that's absolutely terrifying. And it's a relatively new concept. I'd like to learn more about it and how it's going to look in practice, how it's going to be adopted by these companies before I put anything like any faith in sharing my details.
Gemma, do you have a bet?
Not regularly.
No, but you do. But you will, if you really fancy one, you'll have a bet.
Yeah, if I think it's overpriced, yeah.
And to what extent would something like this impinge on your either ability or your inclination to get stuck in?
It's just intrusive, isn't it? Nobody wants people going through their private information, and I would include my bank accounts as my private information. I just don't like the principle of somebody, accessing that.
And do you think, Maddie, then it is more now about principle? Do you think people are more concerned with principle and privacy than they are with the hassle?
I think there are levels of it as well. We live in a world where ultimately, and through social media, etc., we're sharing a lot of data about ourselves all the time without perhaps realising it. So I can understand how people would think open banking would be a solution to some of these issues. But I think when it's portrayed in this way, it rings alarm bells for a lot of people, and I can understand that.
Okay, let's move on and let's talk about what's been happening with our equine heroes this week. Poor old Constitution Hill, he never gets a week off here. I mean, he's appeared more times on this column this season, well, since Christmas, than he's had runs in his life, Aidan Coleman. Happily, he appears in one piece, and now he's had a colic scare. Sometimes when things start to go wrong with horses, they just keep going wrong.
Yeah, I suppose it's down to kind of immune systems, and I know colic's a little bit more technical than that, but look, it's good to see he's going to be OK, hopefully, and we have to wait till next year to see him again, which is... It's a shame not seeing him, but as long as he's OK and we should see him again, that's the main thing, because, with more runs and a bit more longevity, he could be one of the best we've ever seen, but...
Well, you've sat up his backside a few times.
I think I followed him home 3 times in a row.
Yeah.
At a distance, though, so... he's a fantastic horse, but he just needs to be around a little bit longer now, but hopefully he'll get that chance.
Sometimes, Gemma, if you do get held up with horses, is this one of the things that can go wrong? If they're not in routine, if they're not doing everything as you want them to do?
Yeah, particularly with colic, changes to the diet, routine, stress, lots of different factors can come to play. I had a bad colic scare myself last year, and the horse just had to be off for the whole winter. It had lost so much condition. I can really empathise with the team. Like, that horse is going to need a lot of time to recover, and you've got to be very careful with their nutrition moving forward because it can flare up again so easily.
And presumably, it requires a reasonably significant degree of horse husbandry to identify the problem before it gets critical.
Yeah, and, you get to know the horses very well, and it's sort of subtle changes in their demeanour can be picked up straight away. And that's why it's so important to have a good team around you and people that love their job and are paying attention in the right places so you can catch these things quickly.
Yeah, it has been a troublesome season for Constitution Hill. Fingers crossed that his recovery is a full one and we see him again next season. Carl Burke, it is this time, that has mooted the idea of the flat season being changed. I'm only chuckling because he may be right, he may be wrong, but a radical rethink has been called for, well, certainly since I can remember. I want to come to you here, Aidan, because you've talked quite a bit about seasons and jumping through the summer and that sort of thing. Would you like to see clearer delineations of seasons, something done a bit differently?
Yeah, I suppose, and as it's a flat racing topic, it is kind of interesting that it starts off with the Lincoln and then just basically no turf racing for a period of time afterwards, which doesn't really make sense.
So that, and Easter gets in the way and
And they're very important kind of meetings as well, because that gives the all-weather championships and finals and all that their chance, which is really, really important this day and age with the amount.
But of course, that's moving around all over the show.
Well, exactly. It goes with Easter, and that kind of affects everything with, you know, Cheltenham and Aintree and all that kind of stuff, and the Irish National in the middle. So Easter kind of gets in the way sometimes if it falls at the wrong time. But I think the flat racing season, probably, whether it's radical changes are needed or not, but I think it does need to be looked into.
Now, Gemma, given the fact that you roared into the flat turf season at Doncaster and grabbed everyone's attention, would you have preferred to see that at a point where you could have then carried on the momentum on the turf, or does it really make no difference to you?
I just think they've taken the March flat break away from us that lasted all of about 1 year, and then that's been taken away. Like I say, we've been working incredibly hard all winter because of the all-weather champs, and I suspect that that's only going to get more intense. And so I think it'd just be nice to have that break, to actually give everyone a break, to get over the winter excursions before we then, you know, it's not going to stop now. The turf season's upon us. But, you know, having said that, my horses all love the mud. So, you know, it depends on the complexion of the ground and everything as to whether you could push that.
And just to push you on that a little bit, is that a coincidence or is it something to do with the way you're training them?
No, obviously the horses that love the mud, you get ready first, and that's the ones that we've had out first. And anybody that likes top of the ground is either running on the all weather or they're waiting for it to dry up a bit at the moment.
Do you think the way horses are trained can make a difference to their ground requirements? Because I quite often hear trainers, especially jumps trainers, say all my horses need good ground and all we've had is wet weather. And people always used to talk about Venetia's horses liking soft ground and stuff. Can training make a difference to?
I don't believe so. I think it's more to do with, you know, their conformation, their breeding and everything else.
Yeah. Would you agree, Aid?
Just run them. just run them as long as
hang on.
Safe.
Do you want to go back?
Can you take out a trainer's licence? That would be good.
Do you want to go up one again? Do you want to go back to...
Oh, no. I think that's a bit political for me at this moment.
Did you just say you've done a couple of modules, though?
I've done a couple just for something to do while I was off, yeah. And I'm doing an MVQ level 3 in horse care as well, just to try and find out a bit more.
What have you learned?
That's training is hard.
Did it surprise you, elements of it?
I did the last module was a staff module, and yeah, I think that's employment in any industry and scale. It's a bit of a minefield. That wouldn't be the easiest venture to go down.
In your experience, Gemma, these jockeys, when it comes to, you know, horse husbandry, how good are they?
Yeah, I think they'd have the actual training horses, but would be the easiest part. But like Aidan says, it's mind-blowing how many different hats you need to wear as a trainer, and you've got to be good at a lot of different skill sets that might not come naturally to you.
What's the most uncomfortable hat to wear?
Probably the social side of things. I'm not the most comfortable with, you know, flouncing into owners and trainers and chatting to everyone in there, but you just have to get on with it and make yourself uncomfortable.
Have you got a good flouncer who's part of the team, who can do the flouncing while you do the hard work?
I've got friends but essentially it's on me. I've just got to make myself uncomfortable sometimes.
Right. Shall we just gently roll this on to Sunday evening racing? Sunday evening racing has... What sort of level of support have we found out this week?
Very minimal. I think that's fair to say.
OK. Is it working? Is the trial here to stay?
I'm not for Sunday evening racing.
You don't like it?
I don't like it. My staff actually were happy to go, which is probably a different position to most, but it was me that didn't want them to go. I sent my sister, who has a Saturday and Sunday off. I didn't actually send any of my staff that work for me during the week. The hours that they're doing already is too much.
That's interesting. So even though they were happy to do it, and presumably they'd have then been quite well remunerated for doing it, relative to their overall package, were you trying to protect them from a kind of work health point of view?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're going to get burnout. You can't, and we're only at the start of the season now, and we've been, you know, like I say, we've had a hard winter. We've been up and down. How many evening fixtures was there on the all weather? Pretty much all of them. Late nights, all winter, and the last thing I want is my staff out on the road on a Sunday night. It's disruptive to the horses. On a Sunday, the horses lie down. They know that that's their easy day. And you've got all the lights going on at 11, 12pm on a Sunday night. The horses aren't getting the rest either.
So are you now thinking it's a no full stop, given what you've described? Obviously, you have to take the opportunities if they're there up to a point. But at what point do you just say, do you know what, I'm out?
Well, obviously, with the prize money, the owners are keen to go. And if the owners want to go, I will send the horses. But we've seen with previous trials that the incentives aren't here to stay. And they're sort of pulling the wool over our eyes a bit. And, you know, the tail's wagging the dog, unfortunately.
Aidan?
Yeah, I just never really got why you couldn't just alternative, like, say, Sundays or Mondays, where one particular day is all flat and one particular day is all jumping. And that gives both industries time to plan a Sunday, a couple of Sundays a month, which would be really beneficial for quality of life and just doing stuff. Or even if it was a Monday, at least, where you could plan your car to be in for MOT or whatever you have to do.
All right, let's move on. It's 20 years since Graham Lee won the Grand National on Amberley House. We've seen many photographs of Graham of late, proving really quite an inspiration since that fundamentally life-altering injury earlier in the year. Somebody that you know extremely well, Aidan, shared a weighing room with for a number of years, and now his daughter Amy is setting up the Graham Lee Racing Club, and Paul Hannigan, another great pal of his, and fingers crossed, this can really be a great monument to what he has achieved in the sport.
Yeah, it's like devastating, isn't it? And just so many people, obviously, that have worked really, really hard on this. And, you know, like you could see the tributes to Graham, like how popular he was. And although he went to, obviously, flat racing for the last few years or maybe longer than that, we always rode in plenty of bumpers. So he kept in touch with us lads in the jump weigh room plenty. And, yeah, it's very sad to see. And it's great to see people kind of gathering around him and setting up these, you know, these things for him. And, you know, hopefully he's got a long road ahead of him, but, you know, hopefully there might be some light someday at the end of the tunnel.
And, Gemma, in your part of the world, this will be particularly keenly felt.
Yeah, and, you know, anything that's going to raise money for charity, provide a bit of, hopefully, a bit of interest and excitement for Graham himself. And it's just nice to see everyone come together. That, you know, this industry is fantastic at doing that, isn't it?
And there are so few people who have, you know, combined that level of success jumping and on the flat. And now the amazing work of Amy and others is being realised in the shape of the Graham Lee Racing Club. As I said, it's 20 years since Graham won the Grand National. We're going to be hearing from Grand National Connections later in the programme. But one organisation that says they're not going to be attending Aintree this year is Animal Rising, apparently. What do you read, Maddie, into the latest statement from Animal Rising that says they have no plans to disrupt this year's Grand National?
Do you believe it?
Well, do you?
No. Maybe I'm just pessimistic, but why would you? You know, that could well be a tactic in order to get people off their tails. And
their
argument wasn't terribly convincing to me.
There's a number of things that you have to entertain. One is that the industry's response has convinced them. I don't think that's clearly the case, because they don't actually believe in animals being ridden or used in conjunction with humans in any meaningful sense. And second is that their financial flow has been stemmed, which would be, I would suggest, possibly more near the mark.
Well, their argument as well was that, you know, there's evidence that attendances are plummeting, and it's clearly very obvious that the British public, you know, don't support horse racing, which is just absolute nonsense.
Attendances are in decline. That's not nonsense.
They are, but I wouldn't take attendance decline in our current environment as this big signalling that the whole of the British population has suddenly turned on horse racing within a year. You know, the money that's in the industry, the people, all four of us on this sofa who feel so passionately about it, everyone watching, it's such a U-turn, I think, is, you know, considering they had such a huge goal at the start of this endeavour that's still relatively new, a year or so ago, to suddenly go, oh, actually, we're not needed anymore because we've done our job and we've persuaded everybody, holds very little weight.
And we'll talk about horsepower in just a second, but in terms of the actual active response to Animal Rising last year, both at Aintree, Gemma, and then we saw at Epsom, when the sport was clearly extremely well prepared for that, and the Jockey Club were very well prepared, we didn't see any more significant Animal Rising events for the rest of the year. To what extent could that be a factor?
To be honest, I didn't even click into the article about Animal Rising because I just have no interest in them, and I don't want to give them any more airtime than they deserve. You know, I think we don't help ourselves sometimes because we're giving them the attention, aren't we? I just want to let them fade into the background, and hopefully they're going to do that.
OK, so as we let them fade into the background, will horsepower, and we're going to be hearing from Gabby Whitfield in a few moments' time, who's the head of welfare communications for the BHA, will horsepower be a positive force of significance, Aidan, in pushing the sport's message where it needs to be pushed?
I think so, because it's context as well, isn't it? We know things go wrong on racecourses and all that, but it just gives the full picture, doesn't it? And you know, percentages of what, you know, what can happen and does happen. And it's important to be transparent and to have this information out there and all that. But it's I think it's a great initiative, and it's come along at a good time. Maybe it could have been done earlier, but here we are, and it's great that it's started.
Yeah, and I think we're going to find out in a little while why it hasn't come along till now and how sustainable it might be. Now, Gemma, you're someone still relatively at the beginning of your training career. You want to expand, you want to get bigger, you want to be a big powerhouse force in this sport for the next generation. Does this encourage you?
I read some interesting thoughts on this on X. People were saying that, you know, it's all fine and well having this website with all the information on, but that's not where the people that are against our sport are going to be directing themselves. Mm-hmm. What we need to do is, you know, get this on TikTok, get this on Instagram Reels, because that's where the misinformation is being spread. And that was sort of shared with some influencers talking about horse racing. The girl had her own horse and was talking about number of whip strokes and clearly had absolutely no knowledge that we already have a limited number of whip strokes. And I think that we need to get ahead of the game. You know, a website's all fine and well, but who's looking at it?
So if you're engaging in a battle of ideas, you need to be using the right weapons, is effectively what you're saying.
Exactly, and it's the young crowd, and that's where they're spending their time these days. They're not going on websites looking for information, are they?
Is your stable on TikTok?
Yeah.
And how much engagement do you get relative to other social media on there?
TikTok's a tricky one because essentially people like seeing videos of you falling off or nearly falling off. That's what gets the most engagement.
Why didn't, if only they'd had TikTok when you were pointer. I mean, dear, oh dear.
Bit harsh, Nick. Come on.
Listen, Gemma brought this up at the beginning of the interview.
I'll have to track some old videos down. Good idea to get the TikTok numbers up.
TikTok's just you've been framed for the 21st century.
Essentially.
Except you don't get 200 quid a pop from Jeremy Beadle. Right, or the woman off Emmerdale. Right, those were this week's talking points. Gabby Whitfield to come.
Luck on Sunday. Brought to you by Whirlpool. Bet with the world.